The following is a live presentation of CITR News.
CITR 101.9 FM presents News 101, Vancouver's volunteer-produced student and community newscast. Now, here's your host, Katie Comley.
Good evening. Coming up on the program, a former UBC student is claiming her arrest is an attempt to silence critics of the Iraq War, and there seems to be progress in the city's ongoing labor dispute. We'll have all this plus arts, sports, and your five-day weather forecast coming up this half hour right here on News 101. A former UBC student and peace activist, Alison Bodine, was arrested last Thursday and detained for 2 days by immigration officials in British Columbia. Bodine is now accusing federal government of engineering her detention to silence critics of the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. At the time of her arrest at the Peace Arch border crossing in Surrey, Bodine was carrying an anti-war pamphlet in her car. When she approached the crossing, Canadian border officials told her that there was a Canada-wide warrant for her arrest. After 2 days in detention, however, Bodine reported that she has still not been informed of what crime she is accused of committing. The Canada Border Services Agency said it would not comment on specific cases. Now with a look at other local news, we're joined in studio by News 101 reporters Hannah Kim, Rita Farkas, and Leanne Yu.
After more than 50 days on the picket line, a potential light at the end of the proverbial tunnel has emerged for both the City of Vancouver and its striking employees. Both COPE and the City have agreed to bring in mediators for each side to help resolve the ongoing labor dispute. Brian Foley is a mediator with important civic experience, as his services were used to resolve a similar 1997 strike. The other mediator, Debbie Cameron, has also worked with similar civic strikes, including one between the Vancouver Public Library and its employees. Talks between the two parties are set to begin on Monday, and once again, a media blackout on the dispute has been reinstated.
In other strike news, hotel workers of four Vancouver luxury hotels have rejected their employer's offer and are now preparing for a labor dispute. Unite Here Local 40 represents staff of the Four Seasons, Hyatt Regency, Westin Bayshore, and Renaissance Vancouver hotels. Workers turned down a five-year proposed contract during talks last Friday. Union President Jim Pearson says the offer is unacceptable and a mediator will be brought in on Saturday for further negotiations. Although the union has not issued a 72-hour strike notice, it plans to open up a strike headquarters this week. Pearson says workers plan to issue strike notice at the most opportune time to put the most pressure on the employer. However, Hyatt Regency representative Rolf Alsterwater says the employer's five-year offer is very strong and addresses all the main issues.
After his wife noticed an odd-smelling chemical being sprayed on playing fields at Argyle Secondary School in North Vancouver, resident Ed Bickford discovered that the school was spraying the fields with diesel oil. Spraying diesel oil is an outdated way to maintain playing fields. Diesel oil kills grass to create crisp lines marking the fields, but in many districts, vinegar has replaced diesel oil as a more environmentally friendly alternative. Bickford was surprised that such a method would still be used, especially when kids are using the fields just hours later to play on.
A school trustee for the Maple Ridge Pitt Meadows School Board has refused to vacate her position despite moving to Nova Scotia. Now Yustima moved to the East Coast in earlier this month, but insists she won't lose touch with the issues in Pitt Meadows. Yustima maintains she will be able to represent her constituents till the next civic election scheduled for November 2008. Yustima's rationale for stay on is that a by-election would be very costly. Also, the school board is in the middle of a decision on school closures. A by-election would only politicize with the decision on which, if any, school should be shut down. However, a strong majority of rest of the school board want Yustima to resign immediately. The head of the school board said matter will now go to the courts to take Yustima's vote away and force her off the school board.
An AIDS charity in Nigeria is receiving the technical support which it most desperately needs due to the generosity of a Kelowna-based IT company. Steve Wandler, CEO for YourTechOnline.com, first learned about the Gembu Center for HIV/AIDS Advocacy based in Nigeria when a missionary from Africa came to speak in BC's southern interior. After hearing of the many technical problems faced by the Gembu Center and their inability to fix them because of a lack of skilled laborers in the country, Wandler felt compelled to help by offering his skills instead of a cash donation. YourTechOnline.com has been assisting the charity by doing remote repairs on the Gembu computer system from the comfort of their Kelowna offices, fixing everything from firewall protection to virus removal. As the center expands, Wandler says he hopes their services to the charity can expand as well, to include computer repair training sessions for center volunteers and donations of laptop computers. It's time for a quick break, but stay tuned to CITR for more news following these public service announcements.
Have you heard? The AMS has reopened the Sexual Assault Support Center. SASC has a great new location in rooms 119A and B on the main floor of the sub, right across from McInnes Field. And we have full-time hours now, Monday through Friday, 9 to 5. Call ahead and make an appointment to suit your schedule, or drop in whenever the need arises. The SASC works within a feminist, anti-oppression perspective to provide support in the form of one-on-one counseling, accompaniments, advocacy, information, and referrals to male, female, and trans-identified survivors of violence. We also provide support and information for survivors' friends, family members, and partners. All the services provided at SASC are free, confidential, and non-judgmental. We work with you to identify and support your decisions about your needs. For more information, call 604-827-5180 or visit rooms 119A and B in the sub. Join us on September 20th to celebrate the launch of A Matter of Taste, Ceramics and Culinary Connections, a new guided tour linking the amazing variety of food and drink-related ceramics in the Kerner Ceramics Gallery with the unique history of the cuisine they once contained.
The launch includes introductory remarks by ceramics curator Dr. Carol Mayer, a talk by celebrated food historian and author Dr. Ken Albala, period music by Lark in the Evening, and samples of early, modern European cuisine.
This is a public event, but pre-registration is required. To register, please call reception at 604-822-5087. Admission is free for all UPC staff, students, and faculty. For more information, please visit www.moa.ubc.ca. A lot of niggas wish to die. You need to hold their horses. It's bigger fish to fry. You're on the list. If not, pick a number spot. 10 and a half. Tim's is made to kick your bumper clock.
This is News 101, and the current time is 5:11. Another BC woman has been named among the passengers of a recent crash of a Thai airliner, which is raising questions about airline safety in Southeast Asia. Here once again are Leanne Yu, Rita Farkas, and Hannah Kim.
A second BC woman has been named as a passenger aboard the Thai airplane which crashed into the Phuket airport on Sunday. The woman, whose name is not yet being released to the public, was from Vancouver. The 1-2-Go airplane killed at least 89 passengers yesterday, 53 of which were tourists. The flight data records were recovered today and have been sent to the United States to be analyzed. It is still unknown what caused the fatal crash. A Prince George woman was also on the plane, but escaped through a window, suffering minor injuries. Mildred Ann Furlong is now recovering in hospital. The crash is raising concerns about budget airlines, which have been rapidly increasing in Southeast Asia. While Thailand hasn't had a major crash from a budget airline before, Indonesian airlines have experienced several fatal accidents. 1-2-Go Airlines began operating in December of 2003. The plane which crashed on Sunday was built in 1983, but only began flying in Thailand in March of this year. Many budget airlines use older planes that have been leased or purchased after years of use by other airlines.
The results of three by-elections being held today in Quebec are not expected to make an impact on the seat count in the House of Commons. But with the possibility of a federal general election, they are being viewed as an important indicator of party popularity, with all of the four main federal parties hoping to make gains. The elections mark the Liberals' first ballot test since Stéphane Dion became leader. In the Montreal riding of Outremont, which has traditionally been a Liberal stronghold, there is competition from the NDP. If the NDP are able to make a breakthrough in Montreal, it will only be the second time in history that they have an elected MP in Quebec. In the two rural races in the ridings of Saint-Hyacinthe-Bagou and Roberval-Lac-Saint-Jean, the competition is between the Bloc, Québécois, and the Conservatives. Political observers speculate that a strong showing by the Conservatives and a Liberal loss in Outremont would further strengthen the Conservatives' bid to be the Federalist alternative to the Bloc Québécois.
The Canadian dollar reached a 30-year high against the U.S. dollar today. It reached its peak at 97.67 U.S. cents, or 1.0239 Canadian dollars to the U.S. dollar. The Canadian dollar is expected to climb even more as the U.S. Federal Reserve considers lowering interest rates. In addition, Canadian economic data coming out this week will most likely tell of a robust economy. RBC Capital Markets senior currency strategist David Watt is confident about the strength of the nation's dollar. He says the information coming out just continues to point towards the U.S. economy slowing and the Canadian economy continuing to do well. The Canadian dollar appears it may be approaching parity with its U.S. counterpart for the first time since November 1976.
Jamie and Emily O'Neill, a lesbian couple from Halifax, have filed a human rights complaint against the Nova Scotia government. The complaint comes after O'Neill's were unable to legally register Jamie as the parent of their newborn daughter, Jordan, simply because they did not fit the classic description of the mother and father of their child. Because the Nova Scotia Vital Statistics Act states that only one individual can have their name listed as the birth mother, Jamie O'Neill was forced to legally adopt her daughter for her to be legally considered as her child. Jamie Muir, Minister of Service Nova Scotia, says the government has recognized the problem and is in the process of reviewing the act to come up with the necessary changes. Nova Scotia follows the lead of five provinces which have already changed their legislation to recognize same-sex couples as parents.
Human rights activists in the U.S. are reeling after President Bush's appointment of Michael Mukasey as Attorney General earlier today. Matt Laszlo from FSRN reports.
There was a foreign feeling on Capitol Hill today, one of optimism and bipartisan happiness regarding the Department of Justice. It was all because Bush nominated Judge Michael Mukasey to be his new Attorney General. Senate Judiciary Ranking Member Arlen Specter had this to say.
In making this selection, I think President Bush has made a very conscious and deliberate effort to choose someone who would not be controversial.
Specter had called for former Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez to step down months before he did. Gonzalez was accused of firing nine U.S. attorneys for political reasons. New York Democratic Senator Chuck Schumer was also a vocal critic of Gonzalez. He says the president's pick is a step in the right direction.
This selection has meaning beyond the resume of the man selected. For once, the president did not choose the path of most resistance. It gives hope that the final year and a half of this Bush administration may bring less of a go-it-alone attitude than the first six.
Mukasey is seen as an independent-minded judge, one who will openly disagree with Bush if the situation arises. In 1987, President Ronald Reagan nominated Mukasey to New York City's District Court. He was a Manhattan judge for the next 19 years, six of which he was the chief judge. He has presided over a lot of high-profile cases, many of which involved alleged terrorists. President Bush says that is an asset.
The Attorney General has an especially vital role to play in a time of war. When we face challenges, and we face the challenge of protecting our people on a daily basis from deadly enemies, while at the same time protecting our freedom, Judge Mukasey brings impressive credentials to this task.
Christopher Anders, the legislative counsel for the ACLU, says some of Mukasey's work raises concerns. Anders says the Jose Padilla case is the most significant one the judge oversaw. Padilla was held as an enemy combatant without ever being tried for a crime. Anders says the outcome of the case raises warning flags about his nomination.
Judge McCasey heard the case, he issued a decision saying the president had the authority on his own to decide, even for United States citizens, a United States citizen could be an enemy combatant and the person could be held without ever being charged or tried with any crime.
Today, Mukasey said if confirmed, he will stand up for the Constitution.
The department faces challenges vastly different from those it faced when I was an assistant U.S. attorney 35 years ago. But the principles that guide the department remain the same: to pursue justice by enforcing the law with unswerving fidelity to the Constitution.
Vincent Warren is the executive director of the Center for Constitutional Rights. He says Mukasey is better than Gonzalez, but says that isn't the question.
The important question here is, will the next attorney general clearly and publicly affirm that torture, cruel and inhuman and degrading treatment or punishment are always and everywhere forbidden by law?
Warren says his concerns are vastly different than those of the Democratic senators.
The Democrats have a difficult situation here where they are trying to find the candidate that proposes the least amount of concerns with respect to their constitutional concerns. Human rights advocates have a different concern. Our concern is we're trying to find candidates who will say yes to the rule of law.
Warren says this confirmation is as much of a test of Democratic senators as it is of Mukasey. The actual hearing is expected to take place in the next month. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Matt Laszlo in Washington.
And thanks to FSRN for making that piece available to us for rebroadcast. In additional national news, we have Rita Farkas reporting.
An unusual study being conducted at McGill University is giving away free cocaine to its participants. Psychology professor Marco Layton is hoping to study the brain under the effects of cocaine in order to find ways to lower cravings for it. Some may see the study as unethical, but Margaret Somerville of the McGill Center for Medicine, Ethics, and Law says it is unethical if the research is not done. She adds, if you can't do the research, you can't help the people with addictions. Participants must be consenting adults and already regular users of cocaine. Up to 10 male and female participants are chosen each year and are paid $8 an hour for their time. Once the drugs are administered, the subjects are strictly and closely monitored. The cocaine used is from a pharmaceutical company in Scotland, one of the only places in the world where the drug is produced for medical use.
It's time for another break, but there's still much more to come on News 101. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
Now wait a minute. You know you make me wanna
shout, shout, let it all out.
Yo, on Tuesday, October 2nd, 2007, CITR 101.9 FM and the UBC AMS presents That DJ Competition at the Pit. And we want you to spin. So here's the download. It's quite simple. 8 DJs play 15-minute sets each with a minimum of 3 genres of music to keep the party popping. There are no restrictions on what audio sources or what musical style the DJ chooses to use. DJs must bring their own music and needles and provide their own transportation. The equipment provided will be properly functioning, professional, quality equipment. Interested? Then send your demo to That DJ Competition, CITR Radio, 233-6138 Sub Boulevard, Vancouver, BC, V6T1Z1. Along with your full name, emailing address, mailing address, home, cell phone number, your musical style, and audio sources used. MySpace submissions are also accepted. Please send them to thatdjcompetition2007@gmail.com. For more information, please visit our website at www.citr.ca or email thatdjcompetition2007@gmail.com.
T-shirts, well-mannered cardigans, pants, jackets, and underwear.
The Friends of CITR card scores you discounts at Antisocial, Berku's Angels, and Hits Boutique.
Uzbekistan Prints or Rajasthan Colors.
Support CITR Radio and pick up your card today.
I'm Peter Mansbridge, and you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
And welcome back to News 101 on CITR. I'm Katie Comley coming to you live from the Student Union Building at UBC. Thanks for being with us tonight. Right now, it's 5:23, and we're going to go to meteorologist Selena Ferris for your five-day weather forecast. Selena?
A few weak systems passing over the region this week will bring us some variable weather. Tomorrow through Thursday, we will see a mix of sun and cloud. There will be a chance of showers Tuesday and Thursday, with conditions turning to rain by Friday. Temperatures will start to feel a little more like fall, with highs in the mid-teens. That's your weekend weather, brought to you by the Storm Club at UBC. For more information, you can email us at stormubc@gmail.com.
Thanks, Selena, for the weekly weather forecast. And we're going to cut again to PSAs. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
Thunderstorms. See the lightning flashing. Thunderstorms.
Thank you for stopping that. If you actually want to learn more about weather, join the UBC Storm Club. For more information, email us at stormubc@gmail.com. Stop playing those cheesy songs and tune into News 101 Mondays and Fridays for your CITR weather forecast.
What is that? I know what that is. That's music.
For $15, the Friends of CITR Card scores you in-store discounts at Beat Street, Red Cat, Vinyl, Scratch, and Audio Pile. Support Vancouver's finest indie radio station and pick up your card today.
What do you want to do with your life?
I want to rock.
CITR 101.9 FM is your home for live UBC sports.
Second down and 18 for the Clan at row 37. We got our streaker.
Here's the streaker.
Davies drops back. He's got a throw.
Throw it to the streaker.
And the streaker, I think, got Simon Fraser a first down. And we got security getting after him. He's into the Sam, you call it.
He's into the end zone, and he's breakdancing in the end zone bare naked. He's being chased by security, and he's
Did I mention it is also unedited and commercial-free?
He's going to put his team short-handed.
As smart as your mom was when she decided not to take birth control!
Well, there you have it.
All the information about our sports department can be found on our website, citr.ca.
Exquisite Corp with DJ Lee. Thursday evening, 7:30 to 9. Radio way outside the market.
Some even make up their own songs, including lyrics only they can understand.
Imagine your possession. I wonder if you can.
Three blind mice, they all ran after the farmer's wife who cut off their... with a carving knife.
All that noise. All that noise.
Getting back to the music that has come to me from another planet.
Welcome back once again to CITR. In a bit of an unconventional twist to our usual Monday lineup, I thought we'd just take a minute to talk about the upcoming CITR funding drive. Last year, you listeners might remember that we had the funding drive before to raise funds for the station. We are a non-commercial radio station that's been on the air for 25 years, which I think is a pretty big feat for college radio. It's a place where students and amateurs or anyone can express their creative ideas through the medium of radio. I mean, we're not the only show on here. There's news. There's also techno. I know there's goth hour. There's, like, Italian folk music. The possibilities are endless. Anyways, the fun drive is coming up in October, so we're looking to you, our listeners, that we've been counting on for many years to give us some pledges. Just listening in the coming few weeks, you'll hear more information about the funding drive, and you can contact our website, which is www.citr.ca, for more information. Now, to wrap up today, we're going to finish with Wilson Wong and Thunderbird Eye on Sports.
We'll start with the football team's stunning comeback win on Saturday. UBC played one of their worst halves in recent memory and fell behind 18-0 at the break to winless Alberta. The second half started just as badly. Thunderbird Derek Townsend fielded the second half kickoff in his end zone, rushed the ball out, and then for some reason stepped back over the goal line for an Alberta safety. The Golden Bears then took the ensuing kickoff and marched down the field for another field goal to make it 23-0 in the third quarter. But cue the comeback. Both running back Chris Chinsky and quarterback Doug Goldsby used their feet to spark a six-play, 75-yard drive that culminated with this play.
UBC down to the Alberta 11-yard line now. Goldsby in shotgun. Fakes the handoff to Chinsky, and Goldsby looking to go for another run himself. Tucks the ball underneath, heading for the end zone, and he dives in for the touchdown. What a score by Doug Goldsby! And UBC on the board.
Goldsby looks good. Wow, what a score that was.
After the game, Goldsby had this to say about his decision to hurdle his defender for UBC's first touchdown.
I just saw the corner coming up on me, and I just kind of realized what happened after it happened, So.
It looks like you started to do a dance.
Definitely not. I'm white as white gets, so.
That touchdown made it 23-7 for Alberta. UBC's Sean McIsaac then kicked a field goal to close the gap to 13 points. On the next UBC possession, he was nearly blocked on a punt before he scrambled to send a kick 50 yards down the field, leading directly to a safety, making the score 23-13 in the final quarter. After the Thunderbirds' defense stopped Alberta for the fifth straight drive, Goldsby found Darren Wilson for another touchdown from 9 yards out.
Back in action for 2nd and 7, and Goldsby looking to the end zone. Darren Wilson has it for the touchdown. ...23-18 now with the extra point to come. 2:40 remaining in the fourth quarter.
UBC missed the two-point convert, but was only down 5. They then went for the onside kick.
McIsaac puts up the short kick to the far side of the field, and the ball is loose on the turf. The Birds are celebrating. Where's the signal? They have it. The Birds recover the onside kick at the Alberta 52.
With the ball on Alberta's side of the field, Goldsby completed 2 big passes for first downs before running in the winning touchdown from a yard out.
Here we go. The timeout's over. Minute 28 remaining, and it's 2nd and goal. Goldsby going to sneak it himself. Touchdown, Thunderbird!
Head coach Ted Gavaya credits the defense for keeping his team in the game despite being down at the half.
You know, at that point it was 18-0 and we needed to get the next score. I thought the defense played well all day, and I was really proud of the effort they gave. And, you know, it's a team sport, and at some point the offense needs to carry their weight, and they did.
Defensive end Scott McQuaig led the UBC defense Saturday and has been named the Canada West Defensive Player of the Week. UBC now has 2 wins and a loss. They play at Regina Friday. The best women's soccer team in the country stretched their winning streak to 3 over the weekend. UBC easily beat Victoria 4-1 Saturday. Steph Thibert opened the scoring for UBC 11 minutes in. That's when she headed in a long Chelsea Stang throw-in. Thibert placed the ball perfectly into the top right corner. Kristen Zoller scored in the 18th minute before Thibert added another on a scramble inside the Vikes penalty box. Here's Thibert on her second goal.
It was exactly that, a scramble in the box. And then it's kind of those goals I like to get when everyone kind of expects the keeper to go for it, and then saw the ball and I was putting that away, so just determined to get it.
The two teams traded goals in the second half when the game was effectively over. UBC is now 3-0 and has a return match with the Vikes this weekend on the island. The men's team split their weekend doubleheader. They crushed Fraser Valley 5-0 Saturday, but the offense dried up Sunday against top-ranked Trinity Western as the Birds lost 1-0. Thunderbirds head coach Mike Mosher says he's not happy with how UBC played.
I thought we were a little bit better in the second half, but overall I thought we were pretty disappointing, to be honest, on the day. I mean, we were flat from the beginning, and, regardless who we're playing, whether it's Trinity or any team, you can't come out like that, and that's a bit of a concern right now, because I thought we were not very good on the day.
The UBC men have a win, two losses, and a tie. They start a Prairie road trip Friday in Edmonton before heading to Saskatoon. The defending national champion field hockey team opened their season in Edmonton. UBC split their doubleheader, losing 2-1 Saturday and winning 1-0 yesterday. Devin Bromley scored to give UBC a one-goal lead Saturday before the Birds gave up two second-half markers. On Sunday, rookie Elise Milosevic from Duncan scored in the 49th minute, and UBC held on for the win. That's it for Thunderbird Eye for this Monday. I'm Wilson Wong. Tune in again Friday when we'll preview all of UBC's weekend action.
Thanks, Wilson. And that's our program for September 17th, 2007. Today's newscast was brought to you entirely by volunteer efforts. And if you'd like to share your comments, give us a hot news tip, or get involved with the show, contact us. Our phone number is 604-822-5334, or you can email us at news@citr.ca. Megan Turcotto produced this radio program. For more news, join us Friday at 5 p.m. for the next edition of News 101. For the entire news team here at CITR, this is Katie Conley thanking you for listening. Stay tuned for Wings coming up next on 101.9 FM, CITR.